You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, America's last best hope to make the internet safe for absolutely no one, two people who will do pretty much anything for a pizza, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Oh, I like the applause. That's new.
Makes me feel so very special.
It's because of our special guest today.
All the way from Los Angeles, we have somebody, such local talent. We're going nationwide. Mike and Judy go nationwide today. Were you a Seinfeld fan, Judy?
Yes, I was. Who wasn't a Seinfeld fan?
I'll be honest, it took me a little while to catch up to it. Or maybe the first season. I don't know. I didn't really see it. You know what the thing is? I don't think Jerry Seinfeld's that funny a stand-up comic.
No.
I don't really like his stand-up routine. The show I ended up loving, and I got it, and I like the, you know, the existential nature of it. And I guess a lot of that has to do with Larry David, but also with our guest today.
Peter Melman, author of the new book, Mandela Was Late.
More applause! Jesus Christ, Jack.
We're so popular. Peter, thank you for coming. Your book is called Mandela Was Late. And you were a writer for Seinfeld for many years.
Many years.
And the thing,
the thing
that I found really intriguing is I've taken like TV writing courses. I sold a proposal to MTV and stuff, but they always tell you you have to sell yourself as a writer by sending in a spec script, and you sent in an essay.
Yes, because I had never really written any scripts. I got this. I had bumped into Larry David, who I had met him in New York like one or two times, and I had just moved out to L.A. like a year earlier. And I bump into Larry, and he says, "You know, I'm doing this little TV show with Jerry Seinfeld. Maybe you could give me a writing sample, and I'll pass it on to him."
That's so pretty nice.
Yeah, I had in the next few days, I had heard that he'd made this offer to several other friends. You know, people that we had in common. But, you know, so I gave him this essay that I had written in the New York Times. And oddly enough, all these people who turned in scripts, Jerry said no. And the essay, he said yes.
What was the essay?
The essay appears in the book, Mandela Was Late. It was a About Men column from the New York Times magazine. Mm-hmm. Remember they used to have that column in the magazine. It was about a day that I had spent in New York in 1987, where I had just had a breakup with a girlfriend who had been at Yale's business school, and so I was very ungrounded in planning solo weekends. And I walked out of my apartment on East 63rd Street and thought I saw ABC correspondent Tom Jarrell walking down the street, the newsman, and it wasn't him. And I was so good at celebrity spotting on the streets of New York that I decided to spend the entire day walking around New York until I spotted a celebrity, and I wouldn't go home until then.
What time did you get home?
5 o'clock.
Which celebrity were you so lucky to have stalked?
The funny thing is I had given up, and I was just on my way home, and then I saw Newman. You know, the guy who used to write those books?
I'm not the guy who makes the salad dressing.
No. You know, the guy who used to be on NBC News and he used to write
Edwin Newman.
I can't believe I blanked on his name.
Who wrote the language column for the New York Times and was, a Nixon speechwriter, I think.
Was
right?
he?
Something like that. What's your last celebrity spotting in New York?
I can't even remember. Who did I see? It's probably on my phone.
Not counting people that have been on our show.
Well, we always have a star-studded show. I mean, some of the more exciting ones have been like Chris Noth, because I think he's handsome. I mean, I'll always see people and I'll go like, I know that person's famous. And then like, I can't think of who it is. Like, we thought we saw Gerard Butler at the Eddie Izzard show, but it wasn't. It was just some other good-looking guy. What about you?
Well, probably the greatest celebrity spotting in my storied career was Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah.
Right, when we went to see Red Fox in what was really the last days of...
Shecky, like, how old are you? What is the story from? Like, 1974?
No, it was like 2000, you know? It was like, and we were talking about Tom Jones before. That's when we saw Tom Jones, 2000. And what a star-studded weekend. No, that's not true. That was a different... getting the Las Vegas trips confused, as they do. But it wasn't long before that. It was... up at the Hacienda before they knocked that down at the end of the strip. We saw Red Fox, and Evel Knievel was in the audience, and he said, "Oh, my friend, Evel Knievel." And Evel was wearing red, white, and blue spangled clothes. And he looked amazing. You know, he looks like the captain of the football team. Really good looking. And we went up to him. We said, "Evel, you know, we work for High Society magazine." I used to work for this porn magazine, High Society. That was before I was this porn correspondent for Hustler. And Evel said, "Great, I love those naked girls. Come out drinking with me." And we ended up spending 3 days drinking with Evel.
So Peter, are celebrities just like us?
One leg at a time, Judy.
I think they're getting closer. I think we're getting closer to them, uh-huh. Because, you know, the average person is like in such incredible need of attention now.
Right.
And there's so much attention seeking just from the most anonymous people that the gap is closing.
We could all be Kardashians one day.
I have to say that during the 80s, say... celebrity spotting on the streets of New York was probably a little bit more interesting than it is now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it wasn't all actors that you were seeing. You know, you'd see Andy Warhol and, you know, I mean, in the article I even mentioned spotting, Paley, you know, Grace Paley.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's like a pretty high-end spot.
That's a good spot. And also, like, it was more special then because the internet, like, you think celebrities are everywhere because they're always, like, on your computer and people are taking pictures of their cell phones and stuff. And so, I don't know. I mean, Omar from The Wire lives in my neighborhood. That's my most exciting celebrity.
Oh, my God. That's a pretty exciting
He goes to the same pet food store.
Oh, my God. I mean, he's, like, the coolest person in the history of the world. Is he working at all?
He's on Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, good.
Which shoots in Brooklyn.
I worry about these guys.
I bumped into Keith Richards a couple times, and he was super duper nice to me. He bought me a drink one night, and another night we sort of bumped into him, sitting next to him at Balthazar, very, very, very fancy.
Schmancy. But so tell us about writing for Seinfeld. Like, you hadn't written dialogue before, really, right? I mean,
right.
So how did you segue into it? Was it really hard? I mean...
You know, the thing that you would think would be hard, writing dialogue, was not. To me, that was really easy. It took me no time to get the voice of the characters because I think I was used to adjusting my own voice. Because, you know, right. Like, you know, as freelance magazine writers, if you're writing for, you know, Esquire one day and Elle magazine the next day and Penthouse the next day, you kind of have to adjust your writing voice.
Yeah.
So that was no problem for me. What was a trouble was, you know, dramatic structure. I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know, like, anything about a story's beginning, middle, ends.
And the short time format, too. It's not like you have a whole movie to work it out.
Right, like, but...
20
you know,
minutes.
Well, for Seinfeld, a show that is famously about nothing, the scripts seem very, very tight. I mean, they sort of double back on themselves, in a way that's very clever. It's obviously very well-crafted, and it's not... you know, it's not a slice of life. I mean, it's very complex. It's a chess game, it seems, every episode.
Yeah, that kind of developed over time. You know, I mean, if you're on the writing staff of the show, you were always kind of like one or two steps behind Larry's creative growth. So, like, once he hit upon that thing about how all the stories were interconnecting, and, you know, and in the beginning, you know, Kramer barely ever had any stories. So, you know, it just got more and more complicated and, you know, very, very dense.
And you see, I think you see it now too in Larry David's show, where the thing, something that happens, you know, almost so casually at the beginning of the show, you know, he drops a piece of candy and the doctor's office comes back to bite him in the ass by the end of the show.
Yeah. It's funny. That's why I actually have trouble enjoying the show, because I just see it all happening ahead of time. You know, it's like I there's a big problem with knowing too much, especially when you're in LA, you know, like when you're in the show business at all in LA, and
everybody, you know, you're sitting, right?
Yeah, well, most people, yeah. I mean, but you're sitting there in the movie theater and you're going, oh, that line was looped, that wasn't in the original, you know. And then you're sitting there going, oh, you know, you see all the tricks and everything like that. It really makes it hard to enjoy anything.
Well, that's sad, actually.
It is sad.
It's sad, because it's like, you know, if I were a doctor and I could no longer enjoy sex. You know, just no one be, you know, no, you're not buying that? You're not buying that?
The analogy part of the SATs, that must have been rough.
You know, well, you just know what's going on. You're too close to it. You seem to have taken the mystery out of it, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
The wonder out of it.
You peek behind the wizard's curtain.
Exactly.
Listen, but you still enjoy sex.
Very much. With girls.
Okay. To clarify.
Well, we clarified that.
Thank you, Mike.
But I also, though, I'm not the kind of guy who would go to a magic show and say, oh, that rabbit was in the guy's hat before the show started, because to me, that's not why I go to the show. I do go to be amazed, and, you know, I do go to the movies to say, wow. I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to say, oh, you know, those dinosaurs aren't real. I just want to kind of buy into the whole thing. I mean, yeah. I'm a professional wrestling fan, so I'm highly trained in the art of suspending disbelief.
Yeah, you definitely want to buy in, and it just gets harder and harder. You know, and now it's like, You know, you get to the point where in LA, at least, there are only three movie theaters that you even want to go to.
You mean in terms of programming, or in terms of just like the awful environment that
in terms of the environment,
corporate movie going.
You know, in terms of also sitting there through 35 trailers.
What a fucking buzzkill. Worse than that, the fucking commercials, the Sprite commercial, is enough to make me want to leap off the building.
I'm actually better with the commercials than the trailers. The commercials, you know, I at least understand that, you know, that, you know, the trailers, it's like, you know, when you sit in LA and you sit through 20 trailers like that, you know, it gives you that sick feeling that you're just living in a shit factory.
Well, why do you still live there?
Because I love it. I love LA. LA is a great place.
What
I mean,
do you
the
love
business,
about it?
The business might be bad, but LA is great. You know what I really love about it? First of all, you know, we're in Brooklyn now, and Brooklyn is really is like the cool place now. But it's partially the cool place because hedge fund people have basically muscled all the cool people out of Manhattan.
And they're working on Brooklyn, too.
Right.
Maybe not this neighborhood this week, but soon.
Yeah, I mean, in L.A., you know, first of all, people, everybody kind of comes in out there being dreamers, which I really like. There's mm-hmm. a certain incredible idealism, even if it's ridiculous at times, but it's great. And you know, they don't get pushed out, and the cool neighborhoods kind of stay cool and everything like that. You know, it's kind of happening in Venice a little bit, but
right. But
for the most part, LA is just great, and it's really fun, and I don't know, I just love it. I don't understand why people
I'm too New York, I couldn't handle it.
I like LA. I think it's pretty.
Well, you should move out there with your new blonde hair, Judy. You'd be a star. You could be discovered at the lunch
counter
and see you on the silver
screen.
I have
to drive everywhere. That's the problem with L.A.
But it's only 40 minutes, right? Or is it 20 minutes? How in L.A., everything is 20 minutes,
It was right? 20. Now it's about 35.
But in a Prius, it's really quiet.
You know, it's funny. When I lived in New York, I was never late for meeting anyone. And 20 years in L.A. now, and I'm late all the time.
You were on time today.
I can't. Yeah. I have a great time every time I'm in Los Angeles. But, you know, they're short blasts. The last time I was there, I wanted to meet a group of friends who were misplanted New Yorkers or misplaced New Yorkers. All sober, by the way. How is it that all the people from New York to L.A.?
Because you can't drink and drive.
I guess that's it. But they flee here for better lifestyles, kind of like Annie Hall, who's the actor who brought the sunsuit out? Woody Allen goes out
there. Yeah, with Tony Roberts.
Tony Roberts, he goes out there and he got his sunsuit, the whole LA thing, and Woody Allen is just sort of like mystified and kind of appalled. That's kind of me in Los Angeles. So we decide to have dinner, and I'm talking to my friends. Great, five of us will meet. We can't wait. It's like the old fraternity, you know, of punk rockers from New York City. So one guy's coming from Silver Lake, and the other guy's coming from God knows where, and no one can meet in West Hollywood because it's inconvenient to two of the people. So we meet, and we can't really choose a restaurant based on the restaurant. We can't all say, let's go to the East Village, I love this restaurant. It's got to be some complex algorithm of geography to find the epicenter of, you know, what's ever possible. It's like launching a fucking space shuttle. So it takes five people, five cars to have dinner. And, of course, they all want to come right after work because they don't want to stop home before having dinner. So I'm having dinner at 6:30 like Seinfeld's parents or something, you know. And after dinner, let's go have a cocktail. And I was like, what, are you fucking crazy? We just parked our cars. We're not taking our cars to another place because you can't walk anywhere either. You can't just go down the street to have, you know, a civilized cocktail. And to me, that's L.A. It's like, where's the community? It's just so scattered. It's a place looking for a center.
Oh, Mike, you have a beautiful house. You're right by the ocean.
Who's you?
Well, if you live in LA and you're a TV writer, why don't we take a break right now?
All right, here's one from my old band, The Ronchans, Alcohollywood. All right, we're back. Mike and Judy here on the Mike and Judy Show.
Here we are.
And with our friend Peter Melman of many claims to fame, the narrow world of sports, we should talk about, too, working with Howard Cosell, but certainly to the general pop, you were most famous for your work with Seinfeld and coming up with this. Let me play that clip, Jack.
Listen to this. Marcy comes over and she tells me that her ex-boyfriend was over late last night and yada, 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 I'm really tired today.
What do you think she was tired from?
Well, obviously the yada, yada. You don't think she'd yada, yada sex?
I've yada, yada'd sex.
Really?
Yeah. I met this lawyer. We went out to dinner. I had the lobster bisque. We went back to my place. Yada, yada, yada. I never heard from him again.
But you yada yada over the best part.
No, I mentioned the bisque.
Yada yada yada.
One of the things I loved was the sponge-worthy, because sponges were like really horrible for most women. They were like burning little. Sorry, Mike. After our placenta show a couple weeks ago, I shouldn't even go into vaginas, but like. So many people,
but eventually I will. So please.
So many people were allergic to them, but it was very cute because it was kind of like, oh my god, where'd they go? And you coined sponge-worthy.
So demystify it for us. Who was this woman?
The sponge-spiration.
You know what? It's funny. When I was in New York, there was a girl who was a friend of a girlfriend who was, and she was her. The friend was gorgeous, and I noticed that she had these sponges.
Like, you know, a whole closet full of them?
No, but just sitting on the desk. And, you know, it was just like, oh, man.
But I'm with the wrong girl.
And then, like, 8 years later, you know, I'm driving in L.A. during Seinfeld, and I hear that the Today Sponge is going out of business.
Uh-huh.
And that's like, that at the time was like a gift from the heavens, because immediately you can think, like, four beats. Like, what if Elaine was a real big sponge buyer? So now she hears that they're going out of business, so she buys the entire West Side up. And then she had, but she only gets a finite number, so she has to completely change her screening system for who she sleeps with.
I understand Kasparov works the same way.
Yeah. I mean,
four moves ahead.
Believe me, that is like, you know, when you're writing
comedy
when
gold,
you're writing,
Jerry.
When you're writing for Seinfeld, that is your that is just what you live for.
There, now, Judy, you're an expert in how not to date.
Mm-hmm.
Seinfeld is God of maybe sort of like you know, the Bible of how not to date.
Well, I mean, George was the best example of how not to date, how not to do everything, really. But
Jerry, too. I mean, how many girls did Jerry break up with or sleep with on that show over the run?
Well, you know, it turns out that dating stories were great. You know, dating stories were always good. And I happen to have come up with, you know, I just saw tons of possibilities in them. So
were you a bad dater? Are you a bad dater? Do you remain a bad dater?
I think I sometimes can be great, but most times I have some, you know, I don't know. I enjoy it, though. I enjoy it. I like the whole game of it all.
And here's the difference between Peter and me. He writes for Seinfeld about his dates, and I end up in Penthouse Letters. So it really is an American tragedy. But the Seinfeld people, I mean, they seem to be always, and I guess that's part of the, ultimately it's the hook, and if you look at the last episode, they're not that likable, these people.
No.
Right?
I love that. I love it. Like, I know it gets a lot of crap, but I like girls for that reason. The characters are kind of unlikable. I mean,
yeah. I love girls. I you know, she really writes great dialogue, and all the grief she gets is just such jealousy.
It really
She's
is.
She's just good. She writes great stuff.
Yeah, she writes. I'm so happy to have that vindicated by a professional comedy writer.
When are we getting her on the show? When are we getting the cast of Girls and Lena on the show?
They're a little too, I don't know.
Doesn't she, like, live here at Roberta's or something?
No, she lives in Brooklyn Heights.
Really? You'd think Lena Dunham would come here and do the show in no time.
I'll ask.
Ask next time. She's probably having like cocktails with Omar from The Wire right now.
Right. Snoop from The Wire came out to the neighborhood too, maybe to hang out with Omar. Who knows?
Really?
Yeah, I live.
Is she out of jail?
I guess so, because the subway driver stopped the train to get his picture taken with her.
I know she had gotten in trouble again.
Right.
Oh, good. I'm glad she's out of jail. I'm glad she's out of Baltimore. I mean, she needs to be out of Baltimore. She needs to be away from where she gets in trouble.
So there's life after Seinfeld?
Yeah, there's great life after Seinfeld. You know, I mean, you know.
For some of you guys.
Yeah, Seinfeld was great, but, you know, it was pretty exhausting. You know, and it's funny. Seinfeld has replaced college for me in a weird way. You know how, like, you have that dream about having missed every class, you know, mm-hmm. at the end of a semester. Even last night, I have this dream now where I'm at Seinfeld and I've not written one episode and not contributed anything at the end of a season. So it's kind of replaced college for me.
Oh, what do you think of Veep? I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus's new show. I think it's really funny.
You know, I watched it last night, and because Mad Men... At my hotel, they don't have AMC.
Oh, my God. Everyone was an asshole on Mad Men last night.
I've yet to see a single episode of Mad Men.
Tremendous show.
I'm still out in the cold.
So, but, yeah, Veep is fun.
Yeah.
And just to see Julia cursing like that, because, you know, I don't think you can be an American and speak English more beautifully than Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I mean, her enunciation is just so beautiful, you know, crisp. I mean, she just speaks perfectly.
Yeah, it's very funny. I watched the episode where she crapped herself the other day.
Why does that sound so Larry David?
I don't know.
Well, Lena Dunham did it. Did she do it in her show too? Or was that the...
Women are crapping themselves all over the place, here.
I forgot. Oh, maybe that was The Onion. But, you know,
yes, I think it was.
The Onion did a whole thing about her... visiting her gynecologist, you know.
Well, she did visit her gynecologist, and she talked about not using protection or something. It was just, and how AIDS would be a blessing or some craziness. And she's just such a, like, an asshole in the way that 20-year-olds are, you know, not Jack, of course, but kids in their 20s can be just so self-absorbed and blind to, you know, half of what
they're
saying.
Would we hate ourselves if we saw ourselves when we were 23? Would we look back and think, you know, what a bunch of fucking know-it-all douchebag?
I'd be too busy looking at my cute little 23-year-old ass to worry about my personality.
But the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And you didn't even have to look that far back. I think if you're 25 and you look at yourself at back in 23, you think you were an idiot. And then at 27, you look back at 25 and think you're an idiot. And you don't really catch – it takes a long time to catch up.
And then you just know you're an idiot going through life, and it's fine once you accept that.
Once you accept that, life gets so much better.
It is so funny that that's like the biggest thing about growing up is realizing how little you know and how stupid you are.
Once a day, you should like come to the conclusion that you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm. That's very Jewish. It seems very Jewish, right? Very questioning, very, you know?
McGuire?
Yeah. Well, here we celebrate Judaism. It's not quite the same as... So is Seinfeld, do you think Seinfeld is a Jewish show? Do we describe Seinfeld as a Jewish comedy?
I know Jews would like to claim it as a Jewish
comedy. Oh, Jews
comedy.
Want to claim every fucking thing. Yeah. I just read, oh, we started punk rock. It's like, enough. Haven't you done enough?
You know, like Jews and lesbians, they want to claim everything as their own. You know, like... I mean, did you ever see that lesbian show that was on? It was like every, you know. Like,
oh, the L word?
The L word.
I love that show.
It was like
I thought it was about liberals.
Every
what I know.
Woman in the world, eventually they turned lesbian in that show. Like they did not believe that there was any such thing as, you know, just a purely heterosexual
and woman. Every hot woman in the world. There were no, well, I guess in Hollywood there are no ugly people on television, but yeah.
And Jennifer Beals is kind of an old friend, and I was like, wow, you're really doing that show? And she goes, hell yeah.
Oh, it was the best show. I watched every episode. Anyway, I think we're all...
So was Seinfeld Jewish? We kind of skirted that. Yeah, I know you say Jews like to think so. And I mean, as a Jewish guy and a guy who loves Jewish comedy and, you know, and growing up with, you know, Sid Caesar and the people that were writing, you know, on his show were my heroes. And, you know, everything from the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges to Woody Allen and... you know, and Joan Rivers and all these great Jewish comedians. You know, obviously it's a touchstone there. There's something there. Jerry's obviously Jewish, not storyline Jewish, but real life Jerry Seinfeld.
I would say it had a strong Jewish sensibility.
And Larry
a strong
certainly
New York
feels it.
Sensibility, really, I thought.
And the funny thing, yes, but the funny thing is, you know, if you looked at your 10 top favorite episodes, and they could have taken place in almost any other city. You know, it was more about social manners and things like that than it was about... specifically New York.
It's true. And back in the day when Seinfeld was just starting and I was recognizing it, you know, it was having some sort of, you know, Jewish, you know, vibe to it. People I knew who were just new to New York and weren't immersed in the culture didn't get that there was anything Jewish about. Like, what are you talking about? They didn't understand any of what might be considered, you know, a Jewish comic sensibility. But remember what Lenny Bruce said. If you're in New York, you're Jewish.
Yeah.
Even if you're black, even if you're Puerto Rican, if you're in New York, you're Jewish.
Yeah. Even if your name is McGuire.
And again, that's Judaism.
I have written a bar mitzvah movie, several bar mitzvah speeches. I am.
There you go. That could have been a Seinfeld episode.
I'm Jewish by paycheck.
That's what you want to be.
Once again, it's been the fastest 30 minutes on the internet today. Peter, where can we find you and get your book?
Well, Mandela Was Late is on Amazon in both e-book and paperback, and it's got a whole bunch of essays and even my doodles.
Oh, I was wondering who did the art because I was like going through it really quickly. Do you have a website?
I do. pmelman.com. pmelman.com.
And do you have any other promotional events?
Well, I'm doing. I'm going to be on Joy Behar's show tomorrow. She's an old friend.
That's
nice.
Big. That's huge.
Yeah.
Who are guests with GMA, the Today Show, Joy Behar? What's that show?
The View.
The View, is that her show?
No, she's got her own show.
The Coffee Clutch, whatever that fucking thing is called.
She doesn't have the horrible Republican on her show.
What happened to daytime TV, right? I used to like want to get stay home from school and be sick to watch daytime television, but that's, I guess, when that was a golden age of game shows.
Yeah.
I want to watch Concentration.
Right, you know, and Leave It to Beaver.
Yes, Shecky, Leave It to Beaver.
All right, next time come back, please, let's talk about Howard Cosell, because I'm absolutely fascinated about that.
Oh,
part
man,
of your
yeah,
too.
That was fun.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming to visit us, and pmelman.com, right?
Yes.
For Mike, Judy, and Peter Melman, and Jack Inslee, Engineer of the Stars, I'm here on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Mike and Judy, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.